Today is June 29th, 2010, and this is episode something or other of FatCast. I am Leslie Kinzel of FatChinesa.com, and as always, joining me is Marion Kirby of TheRotund.com. This episode is a last-minute effort that we kind of threw together to discuss reactions to the new ABC Family show Huge, which is about a bunch of fat teens at a fat camp. And this is, I guess, an emergency podcast.
Emergency podcast!
It's not really an emergency. It's just that the premiere of the new ABC Family show entitled Huge just came on premiered last night. Actually, I think it's playing again tonight. Today is Tuesday. And I wound up recapping it, although I did not intend nor plan on recapping it. But as I said on my blog, I meant to just write, like, these are my thoughts. And then it turned into a recap, and I was like halfway done, and I'm like, well, shit. I guess I'm writing a recap now.
If that happens to you.
If you want more sort of in-depth information about the episode, then you can go to FatChinesa.com, and it should be right at the top of the page. But I wanted to sort of talk to Marianne a little bit because I kind of felt like I wanted to vent a little bit about some of the reactions that I've been seeing. And I think that we also wanted to talk a little bit about the source material and the evolution of this show. So
the cats just don't give you the reaction that you're going for when you vent to them, do they?
They really don't. And they don't, like, encourage me to flail my arms around and yell. You know, they get scared and hide under the couch.
Oh, poor cats.
Actually, only Penny hides under the couch. But Penny lives under the couch anyway. Like, that's her apartment. So
it's a good apartment. It's a big couch.
Rufus and Oberon just sort of look at me like, what is she on about now?
I'm not entirely sure Rufus can fit under the couch.
No, he can. He's gotten under there before.
Really?
Yeah, there's actually a lot. It's an IKEA couch, and there's actually a lot of space under it, like, for storage.
Rufus amazes me. He is amazing.
For folks who aren't familiar with Rufus, Rufus is the now 23-pound cat that we adopted from an animal shelter back in November, and he had this horrible, tragic story that got even more tragic because we brought him home and he developed ringworm, and he had full body ringworm, for which we figure he picked up in the shelter because he certainly didn't get it from us. And he developed full body ringworm, which meant he was isolated in the guest room by his lonesome for about almost 4 months. And while we paid an extraordinary amount of money medicating him and getting him tested and checked and doing what was necessary to heal this poor fat kitty. And he was 26 pounds when we adopted him. He's down to 23, although that's not through any efforts. We have three cats, so it's not like they all get fed separately. And so that's Rufus.
Well, he lost 3 pounds of ringworm.
That could be it. It could be like all the skin that came off of him. It's so disgusting. Oh my God. Ugh.
That picture of him, I really feel like, just to add extra value added, your value added for this podcast needs to be that picture of Rufus on the rug. The fattest cat ninja.
Oh yes. I will link to the ninja that, that's a great little phone. It's not a great quality pic. Because I took it with my phone, but it's pretty freaking funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was a nice little diversion.
He's huge.
He is huge. And I think we wanted to start by talking a little bit about the source material.
We do. I did a little bit of a dramatic reading of some of the source material in our already recorded but not aired listener questions episode.
I keep calling them viewers too.
It's It's good that they're not viewers, because I don't have any pants on.
I think we should call them consumers. Anyway.
Oh! But I wanted to read the Kirkus review. So people would kind of understand. I feel like this is a particularly apt review for this novel. So the Kirkus review is really short, as Kirkus reviews tend to be. A cliched, moralistic tale of lessons learned at fat camp. Two girls spar and then bond as summer roommates. Perky April has saved all year, all of her birthday money, Christmas, everything, to pay for Wellness Canyon because she wants to be thin and popular. The parenthetical, how birthday and Christmas gifts could possibly total $7,000 for a girl with a single mother on disability, is distractingly inexplicable. Will, in contrast, has rich parents who own a sleek gym chain. Her fatness is their shame, so they force her to go. Both April and Will lose weight over the summer, while they obnoxiously insult each other, become friends, kiss the same boy, plot revenge on him, fight more, and make up. Paley unequivocally touts weight loss and repeatedly uses words like waddled about her fat characters. She also displays ignorance of physiology, equating fitness unquestionably with thinness. Appalling and simplistic.
That's such a great review.
I love it so much, and I felt all of my anger, like, validated.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no. I have a lot of respect for the Kirkus reviews, and I feel like that's pretty dead on. Particularly when the author is using words like waddled.
Yeah, that's...
And a goddamn pancake batter dried in a smear on this woman's glasses.
I actually had a follow-up for that, and I thought about your rage about that. This was a segment that Marianne read. And as we said, the unaired.
Did you smear pancake batter on yourself?
No, it was basically in the bit that she read. It talks about one of the girl's moms having like pancake batter smeared on her glasses, like in the car hours later. And I was at a local barbecue festival thing.
This story just gets better and better.
I was there with my husband. It was last Friday, and I love barbecue. Being in Boston, I don't get much good barbecue because, you know, it's not the same as you get in the South. And so when they have this festival every year, people come literally from all over the country to hawk their ribs at you. And I was eating ribs. And at one point, I forget exactly how it happened, but at one point I must have smeared barbecue sauce on my glasses, but it was like towards the top, so I couldn't see it right away, so I kept eating. And then I look up at Dennis to say something to him, and I realize there's this huge smudge of barbecue sauce over my glasses, and I just died laughing, and I couldn't even explain to Dennis why it was so funny.
That's
because all I kept thinking is, it's you know, barbecue sauce is probably more transparent than pancake batter.
And you were still eating. You were actively putting ribs in your face. She had driven her daughter to the bus stop. Like the bus station, to be fair.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She had driven.
Yeah.
I have another paragraph that I could totally read.
Lay it on us.
Okay. Mom, there isn't time for breakfast, April complained, refusing to take a seat at the yellow formica table. The plastic seat stuck to the back of her legs, so April often ate standing up. The bus doesn't leave for another hour. Her mother was dressed in her typical shapeless navy blue cotton sweatsuit, her recently permed hair lying in short, tight curls around her face. She had a smear of dried pancake batter on her large, round glasses. April's mom reversed her rascal and opened the refrigerator door, peering inside at the crammed shelves. April dropped her bag and reluctantly sank down into a chair. This is your last chance to load up on the good stuff. Her mom leaned over the side of her rascal to grab the bottle of Aunt Jemima syrup from one of the shelves. April examined the crowded breakfast table. Three huge stacks of pancakes dripping with melted butter, white toast, several different kinds of jams and jellies, a giant bowl of scrambled eggs, smothered in Velveeta cheese and a plate of greasy bacon that wasn't even soaking on a paper towel.
You have to stop. Oh my gosh. Oh my god.
You like that? This is like, this is the genesis of the pancake batter that is referenced later at the bus station. And I love that the bacon is not even on a paper towel.
I thought when it made the comment about the syrup that she was going to start chugging it.
Well, she does like fumble for the syrup bottle with her stumpy finger later.
Oh, like, oops. This is one of those things where, like, you have to laugh. Like, I have to laugh about this. Otherwise, I'd be like, I'd find out where this author lives.
What's really funny is the breakfast. Okay, so my great-grandmother, I used to spend summers with my great-grandmother. My great-grandmother was born in 1910. She lived through the Depression. She raised a passel. Of family, both her own children and grandchildren, and I mean, I was her great-grandchild, and I was living with her. So, I mean, this was a woman who was used to cooking for a much larger crowd than a middle school kid, and at that point, I think she was in her late 70s, early 80s. And, I mean, she would do the giant breakfast. She would make pancakes and bacon and eggs. And orange juice, and, you know, do you want a bowl of cereal? I can fix you a bowl of cereal.
And like, she force-fed you spoonfuls of Crisco, didn't she?
She held me down and poured water down my throat. No, like, she made this food because that was how you made breakfast.
Yeah.
But there was no expectation that I eat all of it. I ate what I wanted, and I kind of like to graze, so it was perfect. I had a little bit of egg and half a pancake, because pancakes are really a lot of, like, they sit there like a lump.
Yeah.
You know, and some bacon, because, God, bacon. And, you know, some little bits and pieces of all sorts of stuff. And I love that the eggs are smothered in Velveeta cheese, because that sounds so incredibly not appetizing to me.
It's honestly, it strikes me as incredibly classist.
Yeah, and well, there's a lot of it, because there's also reference to the Costco bulk food that they have in their garage.
Mm-hmm.
Very specific, and the branding is all really specific. It's white toast, and it's Aunt Jemima syrup, and it's Velveeta cheese.
I mean, for those who aren't familiar with the original book, April, who in the show is renamed to Amber for some reason, but April comes from this very working class background. Her mom's on disability.
Single mom is
on disability. And, you know, she has had to save up this money herself to send herself to fat camp. And so they're like, her character, you know, that's why I'm reacting like that. Seems kind of weirdly classist to me. I mean, not maybe it's not weird at all, but it's just seems sort of obviously classist to me.
I have to say, I have a beef with the whole rascal thing too, because the rascal is an important device for a lot of people who have mobility issues, and April's mom's disability is never described as anything other than fatness.
That's troubling.
And it bothers me because people go out on their rascals where they use the mobility assisting devices at different stores, and people look at them and go, oh, well, they're just fat. If they would walk, they would be fine. And they're using these things and they're just so lazy. I mean, this reeks of that to me, and I find that incredibly objectionable.
Yeah.
Like, it's just gross.
Yeah.
There's
completely horrifying and completely offensive to, go ahead.
There's a part where she goes into the garage. Let me see if I can find it really fast. Yeah, April pushed open the door to the garage. Her mother's walker was folded up in the corner, and an old wheelchair from before her mom got the rascal hung lopsided on the wall. In the corner stood the rickety wooden shelves that held their bulk food purchases from Costco. Macaroni and cheese, 12 packs of soda, tubs of mayo, and peanut butter. And it's the picture that is painted really quickly of this progression of loss of mobility in conjunction with, like, in the same paragraph, with the bulk food that they have from Costco.
Yeah.
And the sort of, if you eat at Costco, this is going to happen to you, like, scare voice in the background. And it just really pisses me off. I mean, it's just gross. It's classist and ableist, and that's aside from all of the fat shaming, fat hating issues.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's so I think we have well established that the source book is definitely problematic.
Yes. So when everybody was all, oh, yay, it looks really good, I was like, okay.
I think that, yeah, that's, you know, I knew that the book was problematic, for lack of a better word. And, like, you know, I was sort of prepared for, you know, the show. I mean, and as I had said, up until I read the most recent Q&A with Nikki Blonsky, I was fully prepared for the show to be horrible.
Yeah.
Because I knew that the book was horrible, and I had heard, I have not read the book, in full disclosure, but I have heard from numerous people whose opinions I trust that the book is horrible, and so I never read it for that reason.
Even the Amazon reviews say the book is horrible. And
just
that's
saying
like
something.
General public who isn't into fat, you know, fat acceptance at all.
Apparently, the backstory to this is this show was developed by Winnie Holzman and her daughter, Savannah Dooley. Winnie Holzman is the brains and pen behind My So-Called Life, which most, I don't want to say most, but a lot of people from my generation have a very strong connection to.
I never watched it.
I had that sense because you and I have never talked about it, so I sort of assumed that you were not a big My So-Called Life person. Because it's one of those things that, like, when you discover someone else was really into that show, you have these impassioned conversations about it.
Yeah.
And it came out when it started right before my senior year of high school, and I actually watched it with my dad because my dad loved the show as much as I did.
Oh, that's sweet.
It was really sweet, yeah. And although parts of it were sort of awkward because some of the subject matter is not necessarily stuff that you want to be watching with your parents in the room. But my dad was always pretty cool, so, you know, it was a minimal awkwardness, I guess. And as a show, you know, they really worked hard, I think, to try to make it appealing to adults as it was to teenagers. And one of the stated missions behind Huge is to do the same thing. That there was another interview with both of the writers where I think Savannah said, it's a show about teenagers, but we don't want it to be a show for teenagers. We want it to, you know, appeal to a lot of different people. And I really think they sort of succeeded on that level, my, you know, own opinion. But the background of this is apparently this first started getting developed several years ago when, and they it must be nice to have like a mom who is like in this industry, because, and I'm not saying that because I think Savannah Dooley is somehow untalented and doesn't deserve, you know, to be a writer. Obviously, I think she's pretty freaking awesome if she's, you know, developing this, but I think it probably makes it a little bit easier because apparently they came to her with this while she was still in college and, you know, sort of wanted to get some input from her on developing it. And years passed and nothing really happened with it. And then, you know, all of a sudden it all sort of fell together to, you know, start on ABC Family this year. So I don't know how heavily, in fairness, they are actually relying on the source book. I think they took the characters, they took the basic setting from that, but having, based on what I've heard about the book and what I have now seen in the show, they sound like very, very different creatures to me. And I think that's a good thing.
Oh, God, yes. Well, and I think the sort of summation of the book is that it's an advertisement for Fat Camp.
Right. Right.
So as long as the show doesn't do that, I mean, mm-hmm. even that is a huge leap forward for this material.
Well, in fairness, the weird thing is when I was watching the show, I kept thinking, it looks like so much fun. Like, if you took out the weight loss component and you just make it like happy fatties go play outside camp.
I would go to that camp.
I would go to that. I am 33 years old and I would sign up and go to that tomorrow.
Did you see the Big Moves production Fat Camp?
I did actually see that production.
The concept kind of reminded me of how I felt when I watched that. Big Moves was a dance troupe of fatties, mm-hmm. and fatties of various gender presentation and sizes. And there was a show that they did called Fat Camp, which was basically the camp that all of these fat women went to just not worry about all of the shit that the world put on them. And there was this one girl there who had the mistaken idea that it was a weight loss camp. So it was cute. Yeah.
It was actually really cute. And I think it, you know, like you said, it sort of was that dream. Like when I hear the words fat camp now, I think, wow, you know, what I'm envisioning in my head is so different from the reality. And my vision is so awesome. Like I said, happy fatties go play outside camp. I think that would be fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But so I completely lost my train of thought.
But so you thought it looked like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. So that was kind of unexpected for me because I kept thinking like, and they sort of, you know, I feel like in future episodes, they'll probably get more into this. But even from this first episode, there's a definite sense of comradeship between these kids who are, you know, sort of all on, at one point, someone refers to it being a level playing field in terms of dating because everyone is fat. Now, admittedly, you have people who are different degrees of fat, and that plays a huge role in the show, which I think is incredibly ballsy of them to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really great, you know, and brave thing to tackle. Like the reality that, you know, the smaller traditionally feminine and prettiest fat girls are going to get the most masculine attention.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, they, you know, go to the top of the totem pole by default, I suppose. But yeah, so,
all of this like positive reaction to it, what is it that makes you want to vent about it?
Well, because it hasn't all been positive reactions. And I have read a lot of sort of mixed, I've read the reactions almost like, it sort of reminds me of my so-called life insofar as the people who seem to get the show are like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. The people who don't get the show really, really, really don't get the show. I've read so many comments from people saying, I don't understand the point of this show. And now, admittedly, a lot of these were comments on the ABC Family site and from in venues where a lot of the people doing the commenting are probably closer to the typical ABC Family age bracket, which I think is sort of tweens and teens, maybe some slightly older people, but I'm pretty sure I tend to shoot right through the ceiling of their intended target. But a lot of people have said, I don't understand, like, what's the point of the show, which sort of makes me laugh because, like, have you seen the other shows on ABC Family?
I have not because I don't watch TV.
I don't understand the point of any of them. I mean, they're shows. They're supposed to entertain you. They're shows for teenagers with various types of teenagery problems and drama. And it, by that definition, huge fits right the hell in. But the other reaction, which I know that you will have an opinion on, because this is something that we have talked about many, many times, you and I both, is from, I can't even tell you how many comments that I have read from people saying, this show is saying it's okay to be fat.
End of the world! Oh, and, you know,
that's one of the things that sort of blows my mind, is whenever I see this in the lion's share of these comments, there is this element of panic. Like, there's lots of exclamation points, or there's caps used, or, you know, even just a word choice is that, you know, like, this is unacceptable, and oh my God, we're all going to die because this show is suggesting that it's okay to be fat. And I actually have a two-pronged objection to that.
Tell me your two-prong. Tell me the first prong of your two-pronged objection.
The first prong is that this show, this show is not saying that it's okay to be fat. It is far from saying that it is okay to be fat, simply by virtue of the fact that these kids are at a fat camp.
Yeah.
This show has a single, solitary character who is conflicted about dieting and weight loss. And I got to be honest, and I'm sure you agree with me, if I made a show that said it was okay to be fat, it would, like, blow the minds of America. Like, there would be nothing left. There would just be heads exploding from here, from sea to shining sea.
My show would involve a lot of naked fat people and possibly vast quantities of feathers and glitter.
I could see that. I could see your show.
There would be, like, elements of Soul Train, as there would be dancing, but there would be lots of flesh and sparkly business.
Yeah. No, that was really my overall sort of response to this, was I kept thinking, y'all don't even know what a show that said it was okay to be fat would look like.
Like,
you can't even get your heads around that if you think that this is a show that is telling you it's okay to be fat.
Well, maybe one of the things, because having talked to you, like, I haven't read a lot of reviews because I'm still trying to recover from, like, the book. I get the impression that the people on the show are not visibly racked with self-loathing, even though they're at a fat camp. Do you think that that is where people are getting the message? Like, if you do not overtly, incessantly say that fat is bad, do you think that people are, just by virtue of watching people running around outside having a good time, picking up on that message?
I think that's an aspect of it. I think it depends on who is watching, because I have seen a lot of responses and comments from people who say, oh my God, this show is so demeaning to fat people and makes them look so pathetic. And I've read a lot of other responses from people saying, you know, how dare these people walk around in bathing suits like it's just normal. So I think it depends on the position and the perspective of who is watching. I've also, on a positive note, I have seen a shocking number of comments from people saying, the show seems to be saying that it's, you know, to be okay with yourself and to love yourself and to be comfortable in your own skin. That has also been it gives me hope for the youth of America.
Yeah.
If that's a message they're taking away. Because I think that's probably as close to the intended message as you can get.
I would like to see how the message carries through the rest of the miniseries. How many more episodes are there?
It's actually not even a miniseries. It's a series, which says to me they're probably going to depart pretty significantly from the book.
Oh, thank goodness.
I kind of look at it like Dexter was technically based on a really terrible book. And I'm sorry, y'all, if you like the Dexter books.
I love those books.
I thought they were god awful. Like,
really?
I like beat my head against the book because I just thought it was so terrible.
Really?
But
we'll have to talk about that later.
But that's another example, though, that, you know, Dexter started off being based on a book, but by the end of the first season, it totally went off piece from where the books go.
What's interesting, though, is that each season is still loosely based on one of the books. Like, they take their general premise and they just sort of moosh it around.
I think in this case, we have writers working on this show who are capable of moving forward, even if they run out of material from the book, if that makes any sense. Like, I think that you know, once they have fleshed out these characters and they have an idea of the setting, that, you know, these are people. I mean, again, my so-called life, y'all, seriously, I feel like Dave Chappelle. Like, I'm going, he made Thriller. Sorry, I just watched that over the weekend, so I have it on the mind. But yeah, so but seriously, this is, you know, one of these brains brought us My So-Called Life. I'm pretty confident that she's going to be able to, you know, flesh this out and give it some texture and some soul that seems to be completely lacking from the source material.
Was my So-Called Life had Claire Danes in it, didn't it?
It did.
I have some sort of irrational reaction to her where I hate her for no discernible, explicable reason.
I actually feel the same way about Sandra Bullock, and it makes people recoil from me in horror. Like, it's
she's
like I'm saying,
Miss Congeniality.
It's like I'm saying, I hate kittens. Or puppies suck. You know, that's the reaction I get from people that, you know, how can you hate Sandra Bullock? I can't explain it, y'all. I just do. Irritates me.
I've hated Claire Danes since childhood, since my first exposure to her, which may have been My So-Called Life. And I think I tried to watch it, and I'm just bad at television. Like, I have a really hard time giving a shit about people on TV if it's not a certain, like,
I was gonna say,
if it's set not... of shows that... Shut up!
If it's not Star Trek.
I had a really deep, meaningful inner... life around Shipwreck from G.I. Joe as well. Shut up. He was awesome, okay?
You and my husband are going to have to talk about that at some point. But anyway.
I'm bad at television, so I trust you when you say that My So-Called Life was like this revolutionary, amazing thing, even though it doesn't do, like... I don't know. Does nothing for me. It's like parsley.
What was critical about it at the time, and now when I go back to watch it, it drives me up the wall. I fully admit that I have a hard time watching it as an adult. Certain episodes I can, but Angela Chase, I said on my blog, I want to make her stand up straight and talk in complete fucking sentences. That I have no patience for her as an adult. But at the time... it was important to me, and this is an issue that you will relate to even if you hated the show and Claire Danes, because it really spoke to outsiders. And it spoke to outsiders in that sort of critical high school world where, you know, you can feel like an outsider as an adult, but it's nothing like the isolation and horror that you feel when you're a teenager. Because everybody feels like that as a teenager. And when you have added outsiderly qualities stacked on top of that, you feel even more tragically forgotten.
I had a really weird high school experience that may bar me from that, in that I went to church with the really popular kids who were all really incredibly sweet people. So I was friends with cheerleaders and football players and dropouts and petty criminals. Like, I knew a lot of people. And but sometimes when I go back, like, I get the feeling, and I got the feeling even then, that part of my isolation was self-imposed. And situational, not necessarily because of other people, but because of things going on in my family, things going on with my own mindset. Mm-hmm. But I also started therapy when I was 13, so...
Well, My So-Called Life actually addresses a lot of that as well. So it really just, it happened to come at a point where I, you know, it just really spoke to me.
I'm glad that it did, and I'm glad that this show exists. I mean, I think it sounds really powerful.
Well, I think it's kind of amazing that it's still so, it's attained this weird cult-like status, and that these, you know, kids who are like 14 and 15 today, and keep in mind, this show came out in 1994.
Yeah.
That these kids who are 14, 15, 16 today are just discovering it and falling in love with it, which... blows my mind, because I'm like, God, half of the bands they mention don't even exist anymore. Like, wouldn't a lot of these references just go, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's part of the cult appeal.
Yeah.
Is to, you know, like Buffalo Tom plays in an episode, and it's like, what the hell happened to Buffalo Tom? Actually, for all I know, they're still around making music. I just lost track of them. So I shouldn't assume that that they have vanished off the face of
That's
the earth.
That's right.
I'm sure I will get a comment from somebody who's like, oh yeah, Buffalo Tom, they're awesome. But yeah.
I have never been particularly good at those sorts of shows. Like, they have either been so excruciatingly painful because they are so relevant that I just cannot watch, or I've mellowed a lot as I have aged in my ripe old 30s. But, I mean, I really didn't like people or have much patience for people. So yeah. my perkiness aside, a lot of people on TV irritate me incredibly deeply. So I think that kind of factored into it. So even though I should have been the audience for this show, I just was like, stand up straight. Oh my God. Stop making bad choices. It's like the Twilight books for me now. I spend all of my time yelling that they're making bad choices.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
But I don't, like, I really want Huge to be, I mean, I see so many people hopeful that this is going to be a good show. And so I really, like, I really want it to be good in a way that makes me feel vulnerable to it. Like, if I watch it and it's not good, I feel like it would genuinely hurt me in a way that a lot of the other horrible, terrible products that are put out there doesn't. Like, I watched the opening episode for the fat version of The Bachelor, Big Love, something like, no, Big
no,
Love.
No, More to Love.
More to Love. I watched that and I wrote a synopsis of it and an analysis and that sort of thing. And I didn't take it personally. I feel like if this goes bad, I would wind up taking it really personally. And I mean, I think part of that is because it is all of these things that I feel programmed to like. I mean, it's Nikki Blonsky, and I think she's adorable. And does she have blue hair in it?
Oh, yeah.
See, I mean, And, like, I love her little bathing suit, and I'm so sympathetic to her discomfort and to her, like, her act of rebellion. And
well, if you watch nothing else, and I'm going to say this to everyone, if you watch nothing else of this series, you have to watch the striptease that she does. Basically, Nikki Blonsky's character is named Will, and it's the very beginning of the episode, and this is part of what blew my mind to start with, that I sort of kind of understand why people are like, what the hell is going on? The show is saying it's okay to be fat. Because the series, the first scene starts with a field full of fat people in swimwear. And I'm looking at it thinking, oh my God, this is awesome. This is so great. I'm speechless. I can't think of words to adequately convey the visceral reaction that I'm having to the amazingness on my television screen. And, you know, it really sort of blew my mind and it made me really, really happy. But later, upon further reflection and after reading a bunch of comments different places, I realized, whoa. Like, I look at this and think, oh my God, it's so familiar and it's so human and real and it looks like me. Other people look at this and it's like slobbering aliens from hell.
Yeah. I was
because they've never seen it before. And it's one of the things I always used to say when I used to do my college talk lecture rounds was that we don't have any way of parsing this kind of imagery because we don't see happy, contented fat people wearing body conscious clothing and not looking like they hate themselves or slumped over like they're in a before picture for a diet ad. We don't see that. So the only way we have to read these images is to project this misery and despair. And it's really hard to do that when the sun is shining and people are smiling and they seem fairly normal and not like they're all going to just die of exposure because they have, you know, flab that is exposed to the elements.
Well, we've talked about this since the very first episode of FatCast, which is that visibility is the number one sort of tactic towards normalizing fat bodies. So,
exactly.
I mean, I think it's incredible that there are so many fat people on this show.
There are so many fat people on this show. Nikki Blonsky, for one thing, who I frankly, again, full disclosure, I really didn't like her in Hairspray, although part of that was because I really didn't like that they were remaking Hairspray in the first place. I like the reasoning why John Waters let them make it a Broadway show. Have you heard this quote?
I have not.
Basically, John, and I don't have the correct quote in front of me, but it's, I'll summarize. Basically, John Waters said that he gave over the rights for them to make it a Broadway show because if he did that, there would be high school productions and the fat girl and the gay guy would get the leading roles.
That's cool.
And I was like, I love you, John Waters. I mean, I already love John Waters, but I really love John Waters after I read that. Yeah, so that I have no problem with, you know, his reasoning for the show. I was really sort of unimpressed with the movie because I love the original so much and da 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 da. And I guess I sort of took it out on Nikki Blonsky a little bit. But she in
don't
this,
you feel bad about that now?
I kind of do because she's kind of, I don't know what she's like as like a normal human, but the character that she plays is it's an incredibly ballsy choice for her that she is going out there and doing this, and I imagine it can't be easy, but she's doing this amazing job with this very difficult and complex and occasionally incredibly unlikable character. And I give her enormous props for that. Huge props, even. I killed myself. but so she's wonderful in it. Hayley Hasselhoff is wonderful in it. And
is Hayley Hasselhoff related to the Hoff?
She is. She is his daughter.
That's and fantastic.
She actually credits him with her self-esteem and her ability to, like, you know, live in Hollywood and not hate herself 24/7, that apparently David Hasselhoff is incredibly supportive of his, you know, slightly chubby daughter and
aww,
never really, really never pressured her to lose weight or told her that she had to look a certain way, which I think is sort of...
Which is amazing coming from the star of Baywatch.
Yeah, it's disarmingly awesome. But yeah,
I love David Hasselhoff because David Hasselhoff was, okay, he, much like Shatner, he's a very Shatnerian figure.
He's a Shatnerian figure.
And one of the reasons I love the movie Dodgeball so much is that they are both in it. And David Hasselhoff has this cameo. The German dodgeball team, like, they rally around his photo, okay? And when they lose, they're all crying, and he's yelling at them in German, and he calls them pigs and losers. And he breaks the photo that they have of him. And I mean, it sounds terrible, but it's this incredibly campy, over-the-top performance. He has a riding crop. And the German team is crying because the Hasselhoff is, like, taking them to task for losing a dodgeball game. And I'm like, who wakes up one day and is like, oh, yeah, today I am going to film that. The Hoff does, just yeah, as the Shat occasionally films these scenes.
He has the awesome daughter too. Yes. So that he gets some points for both of those.
Well, that just
issues.
Makes me like him even more is what I am saying.
Yeah.
Yay, David Hasselhoff.
But the other really like radical thing, as you just mentioned, is that there are so many fat people. Like, the show is all fat people. Gina Torres is obviously not fat. And I keep forgetting the name of her character, so I just keep thinking of her as Gina Torres. So, yeah, she's very much not fat. They're the sort of, like, counselor cabin mother girl thing that lives, you know, sort of in the cabin with... Sorry, that was bad.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
That was terrible. She's this very perky, upbeat, tiny little thing that is the I guess, like, the counselor for, you know, our group of misfit girls.
Toys?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But she's obviously thin. The Jillian Michaels simulation is thin.
Just the idea of a simulated Jillian Michaels. Drop a pill in water and she's froze for.
That is such a great image. Anyway, the other sort of, I guess he's supposed to be hunky, but he looks like, I don't know, he doesn't strike me as hunky. He's probably hunky to teenage girls, but the other coach is this guy George, who obviously is not fat.
One did you think was hot?
Oh, God, that's, I don't even want to talk about that now.
No, now we're talking about it. Which
basically,
one did you think was
basically
hot?
There is this character of Ian, who I already forgot the actor's name. It's Ari something, which is weird because every guy I've ever known named Ari was really, really hot. He plays one of the teenagers at the camp, and he's sort of positioned. I don't know if he's going to be like a love interest for Nikki Blonsky's character or not, but they sort of connect because they talk about the Pixies, and he plays guitar and stuff, and just imagine like every boy that I had a crush on from the age of like 16 through the age of like 20, and that's basically this guy. And I posted about this in my recap, where I basically said, you know, I need someone to confirm for me that he is of legal age. Otherwise, I am going to feel really, really filthy for finding him so attractive. And of course, this is why I love my commenters. Of course, like, comment one is from someone who actually knows him and is like, well, that he's 17 and you have, you know, maybe in a few more months you can feel less dirty about it. And I'm like, oh my God, I wish I didn't know now. Because this is the thing, Mary, and this was my big shocking realization today. My big shocking realization today is that I have reached the threshold of that level of agedness at which it is possible to be attracted to someone who is half my age.
Leslie, I'm going to go ahead and call you a cougar.
Oh my God, that's the most depressing thing I have ever freaking heard.
Every time you wear animal print.
Oh my God, but yeah, so it...
That's amazing.
And it's not, I mean, you know, it's yes, the actor is attractive.
Is he fat?
Oh, he's quite fat, yeah.
I don't know, and which... I'm putting in, like, Google search terms, and the only thing I find, even when I think I have his name, is pictures of Nikki Blonsky. Image results for Ari Stidham, I think is his last name, Stidham, something like that. It's all Nikki Blonsky.
You can, if you go to the YouTube channel for ABC Family, he's in some of the videos there, so you can get a sense. But yeah, he's basically, as I said, he is basically take every guy that I lusted after from, you know, during my formative lusting years, and it's basically that guy.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's basically where that's coming from, and I can't believe I'm talking about this, because since I found out he's 17, I'm like horrified by my own elderly lustfulness. Yeah.
Cougar.
Yeah, thanks.
Sorry.
Thanks. I'm never going to live this down now. That's okay. I can take it. I'm tough. But yeah. So,
you're fat. Comes with the territory.
Exactly. But they have the cast. The other really neat thing about the cast is that there is a pretty dramatic diversity of bodies, too, where you have, you know, a lot of times when you have the fat person in a show, because there's rarely more than one, they're sort of, you know, they're fat, but they're not like great big death fat, or, you know, they have them in so much Spanx that you can't tell.
Yeah.
Or there's no like visible roles or anything like that. You have all of that in the show.
That's
and fantastic. There's death fats and there's little tiny fats and all kinds of people in between, and people like Nikki Blonsky apparently is, I swear, like under like maybe 4 feet tall. She is teeny tiny little thing based on her standing next to like everyone else on the show. Actually, she's probably like your height, but I don't, you know, I'm sort of tall, so I tend to, yeah, sorry, that came out all wrong.
I'm making another face at you.
I knew it.
Also, I'm going to tweet about you being a cougar.
Oh, no.
I've decided.
But yeah, so, you know, there's an incredible amount of bodily diversity, and that's really kind of, I mean, that alone is incredibly awesome to see, that they didn't just grab a bunch of people who were approximately the same size and huck them in a show together, that there's people with a lot of different, and probably my favorite casting thing, which I talk about on my blog, so I apologize if this is redundant, is the black female character. Unfortunately, there is only, there's only one black female character that I can personally readily identify as being black. There may be a couple of characters who are biracial. I don't want to assume. But the black female character that Nikki Blonsky's character first befriends, I had sort of like prepared myself to have this very stereotypical sassy black girl, mm-hmm. and she's completely the opposite of that, which Marianne is so fucking refreshing. Like, she's always reading a book and she's sort of quiet and she's, you know, kind of insecure. And not that I want anyone to be insecure or quiet, but that, you know, it's just sort of remarkable to see the casting against type.
Right.
Because we have this, and this is something that is just unavoidably annoying to me, that whenever you run into, if you've got a fat woman on a show or in a movie who is black, she has to have this big old attitude,
yes.
that, you know, basically paints the idea that all fat black women are this way and there is no other way to be if these are your physical attributes.
Yes.
So I thought that was really, really awesome and, dare I say, unexpected. I don't want to give them props for doing something that they should be doing anyway.
Right.
But at the same time, I do want to acknowledge that, wow, this is a non-stereotypical character. Who would have thought?
Excellent.
Yeah, so that made me very happy.
And, I mean, all of this stuff makes me so pleased. I want to see how it plays out over more than just one episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I'm going to remain skeptical about this until I can, you can, you know, convince me to get the first season on DVD. That sort of skepticism.
Yeah. Yeah,
which,
I hear that.
I don't
that.
Know. And I feel bad about being, like, the jaded, bitter fatty, but I am in this situation, the jaded bitter fatty. I really want it to be good, but I've been burned too many times.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty skeptical about it too.
Yeah.
There are a lot of problems with it. I'm sort of focusing on how awesome the visibility is and all of that. I still have some issues because there are a few moments where I kind of was like,
And I know you tweeted something about how the website is full of health tips.
Well, this is actually, I'm going to blog about that separately, because during the show, there amongst the commercials, there was a little hit for check out our website on how to live huge and get, you know, something about health. And I was like, what? And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? They did this because people will freak out and be like, you're promoting an unhealthy lifestyle. So they put up this giant website to try to head that off.
You know what? That's the best tagline, though. How to live huge.
It is an awesome tagline. And the neat thing is, I haven't looked at it. I've looked at it only really cursory. I gave it just a very brief glance today.
Right.
But it doesn't. It is remarkably un-weight loss focused. I don't want to say that it's, you know, right on target with like health at every size, but it definitely isn't all focused on fatties need to lose weight and that will instantly produce health. That it seems to be more interested in eating, you know, nutritious meals and having, you know, certain level of activity and which all of which things are problematic in their own ways, but that's a much more diplomatic approach, and I would argue a more sort of mentally healthful approach,
yeah,
to this than to, you know, have an appending website that is basically like, you know, if you want to lose weight like the people on our show, this is what you should do. Have you considered eating less and exercising?
I'm so afraid it's going to devolve into that. Like, I followed a link on a friend's blog that was like, the one irrefutable truth, if you burn more than you eat, you will lose weight. And I'm like...
But that's not true. It's totally refutable. I refute it.
I refute it as well.
We're sort of segueing on to my second prong, which I did not actually get to.
I forgot about your second prong. What was your second prong?
My second prong in my reaction to the, oh my God, the show says it's okay to be fat reaction thing is... It is okay to be fat.
I could have predicted that one.
And you don't get to decide what other people's bodies look like. And other people don't get to decide what your body looks like. Hence, it is okay to be fat for any given individual who has determined that for him or herself.
I wish we had some sort of, like, you've won a prize, like, noise and graphic that involved balloons and doves and a lot of confetti. Because apparently you and I know that, and lots of other listeners, viewers, whatever, know that, and other people still are learning it, but other people are still promulgating the one irrefutable truth, and I'm just like, I cannot... deal with this.
Well, I mean, like I said, a lot of the responses to this, everyone has an opinion, and I appreciate that. And I approve comments on my blog often that are from people where I'll hear, like, why did you approve that comment? Because that person's horrible.
Yeah.
Because everyone has an opinion, and as long as they're not personally attacking me or personally attacking fat people as a group, then I generally don't have a problem with talking to people about their opinions. But one of the things that sort of bugged me about some of the reactions I've seen to Huge, namely the ones who are like, this is so demeaning for all of the cast or whatever, is that unless you have an informed perspective on this, your opinion isn't going to hold a lot of weight with me.
Why are people saying it's demeaning? Because, I mean, are they saying it's demeaning simply because fat people are exposing their bathing-suited bodies?
I think that's probably part of it. I think it may be as simple as that.
So by virtue of letting people look at them, fat people are demeaning themselves.
Ostensibly. I mean, that's the only thing that I have been able to sort of suss out on this. I mean, I feel like, and you know, I get that it makes people uncomfortable. Well, I mean, I sort of get it. I guess I could say I get it, but I don't really sympathize with it. I feel like tough fucking shit because if I have to stare at airbrushed, fake-looking models everywhere I go every single day with no real way of avoiding it short of wearing a fucking blindfold,
yeah,
then I'm not going to sympathize with people saying, oh, Nikki Blonsky took off her pants and I was uncomfortable. Like, tough fucking shit if that makes you uncomfortable. Fucking blow me if that makes you uncomfortable. Because you know what? I get to see that every time I take off my fucking clothes.
If that makes you uncomfortable, good. I am exactly. glad you were provided with that opportunity for discomfort.
For sure. So I'm reluctant to, you know, take these opinions too much to heart, because I feel like unless you have sort of a first person personal experience that you can speak from, or unless you have to have some way, some means of comparison, or some yardstick by which you are judging the alleged demeaningness of being allowing yourself to be seen.
Context.
In fairness, more clothes than Lady Gaga wears on a regular basis. And I love Lady Gaga, but she goes around mostly naked a lot of the time.
I really, really love that underwear and some pantyhose count as fully clothed for her.
I think that's fantastic.
I do.
I really do.
And I want more people to embrace that sort of thing. I saw a woman walking down the side of the road in, like, work pants and a bra. And I was like, preach it, sister. Let's do it.
I want people to embrace pantslessness more.
Yeah.
Like you are right now.
That's correct, because everything is better when you're not wearing pants. Most things are better. There are some things I can think of that wouldn't be better. But think about it. It's so comfortable to not wear pants. Like, you could be at the dentist, and even that would be more comfortable if you didn't have pants on.
It's completely true.
We are
in solidarity on the pantslessness issue. I think we should probably wrap this so-called short episode.
We do this every time, though, so I am not even going to pretend to be surprised and or guilty. The shortest thing we've done was an outtake.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
And it wasn't intentional. Apparently, we have to record things unintentionally in order for them to be short.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this has been an emergency convening of the Fat Cast. I am Leslie Kinzel.
I am Marianne Kirby.
Woo! And thanks for listening. Have been listening to FatCast. The music you've heard in this podcast is by NSA. FatCast is shared with you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license.